Hey there, thanks for joining me on this edition of Fit Friends Happy Hour. My name is Katie Hake, and I am your host. This is episode 139, if you can believe it, and today we are talking with Alexis Christina, CPA, about the love-hate topic of all things money. Alexis is a CPA, the founder of Advance Accounting LLC, and the creator of the Boss Lady Academy. She is dedicated to helping fast-growing businesses as well as startups to maximize their business profits. Now, using easy-to-understand methods, Alexis has helped women gain confidence in their finances and has helped their businesses scale to the next level. Now, whether you're an entrepreneur or you have no concerns about starting your own business, yes, we do touch on business throughout this podcast, but there's really a lot of good personal takeaways just about money mindset and how you can really start to shift your beliefs to help you have, you know, a happier, healthier relationship with money. All right, on to the show. And if you're new here, just a reminder, don't forget to subscribe, leave us a review, and head on over to Facebook to join our free community. This is where we share discussion around each episode, and it's a space to connect with other like-minded, fierce females looking to be the best version of themselves, whether that's with nutrition, fitness, or mindset. Just search Fit Friends Happy Hour and request to join. All right, on to the show. Welcome to Fit Friends Happy Hour, a podcast about all things nutrition, fitness, and life in your 20s and 30s, all from a non-diet lens. I'm your host, Katie Hake, and I'm a registered dietitian nutritionist and certified personal trainer. Join me here every week as I talk with interesting people and experts from all walks of life about their relationship with food, exercise, and their bodies. I am on a mission to help you redefine the word fit, to help you stop quantifying and start living. Learn to stop measuring your success by the scale and find your fierce. Alexis, welcome to the podcast. We are so excited to have you today.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
So tell us a little bit about who you are and kind of how you started to get into money.
Yeah, so I'm a CPA and my journey to become a CPA was pretty long, I guess. I went to college. I knew I wanted to do something in business. I took my first accounting class. I was just like a general business major initially. And I took my first accounting class and I was like, oh my gosh, the type A person in me like loves this. This is amazing. And so I switched my major to accounting. So I got my bachelor's and my master's in accounting, and I worked in the industry for about 8 years before I actually got my CPA license. So then I kind of had to get back into like study mode, and getting the CPA license is insane. It's actually 4 different exams.
Yeah. Explain to that, because I feel like a lot of people, I love hearing this about just different fields because like as a dietitian, a lot of people don't realize what you have to go through. And I think that just speaks so much more volumes to your credibility and, you know, the expertise. So tell everybody with the, kind of that process.
So to be able to sit for the exam, you have to have a certain number of college credits. Usually it's basically you need a bachelor's and a master's in accounting. So you need that. And then, you know, sometimes if you had a bachelor's in something else, you can get your master's in accounting and then maybe just take a few other classes to meet the requirement. And then you need, in most states, you need 1 year of work experience before you could even sit for the exam. So then the exam, it's not even one exam, it's 4, and they all have 50% pass rates, which is insane.
My test anxiety already. I'm like,
I know.
4 exams.
Yeah. And so thankfully I passed all of them the first time, because I don't even know if I would have failed any of them if I would have like continued. It was really stressful and difficult. A lot of material to study, and I did it with 2 kids and it was crazy. And I had a full-time job at the time. So it was a lot. It was a lot.
Wow.
I'm glad it's over. Yeah.
So you became a CPA. What was kind of your money story? Was it just you liked learning about it? Did you have kind of something that, you know, you grew up with that inspired you to kind of take on this career?
I think it's more the organization, because I'm very like type A, and I knew I wanted to do something with business. Like I always, when I was little, I would like pretend play with an office I was like an office person. And I would get on the computer and like fake type or play with spreadsheets or whatever, you know? So I knew I wanted to have like a corporate, I guess. Funny thing is I never actually worked in big corporate America. I always worked with smaller companies, but that's like another, I like do not like big companies. But yeah, I always wanted to do kind of an office businessy type thing. And so I don't think I was so attracted to like, oh, accounting, like money, like it wasn't more about that. It was more about like, oh, so you can organize all of this money coming in and going out. We can organize it and make it nice. And so I think that's really what drew me in. I was like, this is like the best thing ever invented. So yeah. And so my money story, I mean, I guess I'm kind of neutral. You know, I grew up, my parents were like middle class. You know, we weren't super poor, but we definitely were not like super rich either. And I know my mom is like a big saver. So I'm a spender. Like I like to buy things. So that's my money story. But yeah.
I am a spender too, which is part of why many of our listeners are spenders. So that's part of why we needed to have you on the show to talk about a lot of these things. So before we dive into what we're talking about today, which is kind of almost around the mindset of money, you know, you have your own podcast called Making Money Fun, but I want to hear a little bit more about kind of your business background. So you mentioned you don't like working for big companies. So what was that point where you decided to become an entrepreneur? Like, did you find that there were people around you asking you a lot of questions, or what was that like?
Yeah, I always wanted to have my own business also. Like when I was little, I would sell little friendship bracelets that I made. When I was in high school, I started making beaded bracelets and selling those. I mean, every hobby that I had, I was like, oh, I could sell this. This could be a business. And so I went to college and I started working, and I just ended up getting a job at a small business. And then I went from that small business to two other ones. And all of them were just small business. I was pretty much the only accountant. I did everything. You know, I love that small business vibe where you're not just like a number. You know, like my mom worked in corporate America and she was definitely a number, and she would come home with stories and I'm like, they don't even care about you. Like you're just like so replaceable. Whereas when you work for a small company, it's like you are really important, you know? So I loved that. And then when I was working, I was still trying to like figure out how I was going to be an entrepreneur. So I had an Etsy shop and I used to blog. And what I found was that, yeah, when I was having my Etsy shop, I was getting connected with so many other Etsy shop owners, and everyone was like so overwhelmed and confused with accounting and taxes. And I'm here like, huh. I'm not confused at all. I'm like, it's these people.
Guys, it's simple. I don't get what you don't get. Oh my gosh, that's hilarious.
Yeah. So I basically stopped my Etsy shop and then I went into opening an accounting firm and then helping people like that. And then it just grew. It's kind of like a light bulb went off. I was like, why am I trying to make an Etsy shop? And I wrote a novel, okay, a fiction novel. So at one point I was going to be a writer.
What?
Yeah. So it was kind of like a light bulb moment where I was like, why don't I just do what I'm an expert in and provide value that way? And so that was like, oh yeah.
Isn't that just so funny how oftentimes we are so close to the thing that we need to do that it's like right under our nose and we can't figure it out because sometimes we're too close to it.
Yep.
So what do you find, right? You talked about working with business owners, but what did you find were some of the biggest barriers where people are overwhelmed and just kind of money in general? Where are the areas that people find that they get stuck, and why don't we talk about this more?
Yeah, I think it's a very personal subject. So sometimes I think people don't want to talk about it because there's a lot of like conditioning around it. You know, I mean, people say money isn't everything, but it literally makes the world go round. You know, like without money, you can't really do much. So there's a lot of pressure involved in it. And then it has to do with the conditioning of just our culture. And then how did your parents view money? You know, and I think a lot of our parents were more like, oh, don't spend the money. Like, we need it, you know? And so that affects a lot of it. And then it just being like really a personal thing. And you don't want to like just go around like talking about how much money you have in the bank or how much debt you have or what you're spending money on, you know? And that's both ways. Like, you know, if you don't have a lot of money, you might feel like shame for not having a lot of money. And then if you have a lot of money, you might feel shame for that because you might feel like someone's going to judge you or whatever. So it's like this whole complexity of like emotions and conditioning and all of that. And then on top of that, once you're finally like, okay, I'm going to tackle this money thing and I'm going to organize my money, then it's just like overwhelming and there's information overload. You don't even know where to start. You're like, okay, well, now I got my mindset right. I'm ready to do it. But like, what do I even do? Like, how do I even tackle this?
It reminds me so much of like mental health, right? It's one of those areas that it is so personal. It's so individual. A lot of it, like you said, has to do with how you're raised and just the environment that we live in, that it's like the elephant in the room. It's like, well, if we don't talk about it, we don't have to deal with it. And if we don't have to deal with it, well, then life is just happy-go-lucky.
Yeah, exactly. And I think avoidance is definitely very prevalent in the whole money world. People are just like, oh, I just won't deal with it until tax season, you know?
So then what happens, let's say, when tax season rolls around? Like when women come to you, what is the position that they're at, right? You mentioned they're kind of overwhelmed. What are some of the issues that you feel like come up when people are ready to look at it?
Yeah, especially for business owners, this is a big one because your business, you know, your income and expenses for your business have a lot to do with your taxes. On the personal side, when you don't have a business and you do your taxes, just like you just get a form and that's it, you know? So especially in that first year of business, people are just really overwhelmed and they come to me with like no organization at all, you know? So then I give them a spreadsheet and I'm like, okay, well, we're going to organize this. Let's get your taxes done and then set you up for next year so that it's not overwhelming. And what they find is that, you know, people think that there's only value in doing your accounting for tax purposes. And the reality of it is, I always say taxes don't matter because the taxes come around once a year, you just pay it and that's it, it's gone. But when you start tracking your income and expenses and you have a system, then you can analyze what's going on and then you can make more profit. And then you're also strategic, you know, make more profit, but also keep the tax bill low. And a lot of times what ends up happening is when they don't track, it's either they realize they made a lot of money and now they owe a lot, or they didn't make a lot of money, which is fine because then you get to take that loss, but it's still overwhelming and it's just like a mess to figure out. And then it's kind of like, well, I didn't make money, so that's not good. You know, it's good for taxes, but you're in business to make money.
And it's just like anything, right? If we're not kind of keeping our pulse on it, we just let the year go by. And then you've got this information, right? You're sitting around tax season and you're looking at all these things. It's almost easy to go, well, it's too late now. Well, it's kind of done. Where do I go from here?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And a lot of people deal with that. And it is kind of done for the last year. But for the next year, you're going to want to not let that happen again. It usually always happens that first year. You know, you're just busy trying to get your business up and running, trying to get sales, all of that. And so it kind of gets put on the back burner, you know? So that's pretty common. It's not uncommon to have a mess the first year, but a mess the second, third, and fourth year, you might not be in business for long.
So if it's a mess, just take it what it's worth. And it sounds like starting by getting organized. So I've always heard that part of that organization, or like you said, you know, looking at your finances regularly is budgeting, right? That's essentially keeping a budget. Mm-hmm. So my question is, why do I suck at budgeting? Why do people find that it's so hard to start? Is it a habit, or like, what is it that makes that a challenge?
Well, I think it's, again, the information overload. And then there's a lot of options. You know, so there's a few different apps that people try to use. And honestly, I always go back to a spreadsheet. I personally use a spreadsheet for my personal finances and as well as far as budgeting. So budgeting, that word kind of feels restricted, you know? And essentially, the budget is not there to restrict you at all. It's actually the opposite. It's there so that you can forecast into the future and know how much money you're going to have in the future. So if you want to buy something, just put it in there and then you'll know if you can afford it. And if you can't afford it, you'll know how much more you need to make in order to afford it. And so I always say the budget should be two things. It should be flexible and relevant. So the problem with some of these apps and softwares is that it's just not flexible. Like, they want you to go in and be like, okay, here's your gas budget for the year. Here's your grocery budget for the year. And, you know, the year is just, and life is so fluid, you know, everything mm-hmm. changes, especially in a year. You can't budget for the whole year and expect it to be accurate. So you need to be able to go in there and change things very easily. And that's one thing that's difficult to do in these apps. It's almost like you set your budget and then to change it, by the time you log in, it's like they've did an update and it's like, where do I change it again? Like, I can't even remember. And then you're just like, whatever.
It's almost like there's too much capabilities in the app that it's easy to get distracted of, well, this is red and this should, it's really easy to get distracted by the little nuances of it.
Yeah, exactly. And then the other part of it is it needs to be relevant. So if you're not updating it with actual numbers, then it's not even relevant. Like, okay, yeah, here's my budget. Looks like I went over. What does that mean for next month? You know, you really have no idea. So you need to have like a cumulative running total of how much cash you actually have. And it's pretty simple to create a spreadsheet with this. A spreadsheet is just so easy. You can go in, you can change everything in like a few seconds, you know, and then you can easily update it. And then if you have it set up correctly, and I have like a couple for sale also, but like it's really easy to do yourself with basic formulas, adding and subtracting and things like that. But if you have like a cumulative total of what you have in the bank, then you can go in there and add, subtract things, like whatever, and it'll update that total. So then you can know the cash that you have after you spend the money.
Right. Kind of, which of course is the end goal, right? More income versus expenses. So how often do you suggest, you know, both for business owners, but also for personal, how often should somebody be looking at their budget in order to make it worth it? I guess I should say.
Yeah. Well, honestly, the more that you look at it, the better. So whatever, if you're not looking at it at all right now, maybe try to look at it monthly, or maybe try to look at it daily and create a habit, and then you can kind of back off a little. I definitely do it every day for me personally. And I've actually found that that's helped, because you're tracking your sales every day, you're tracking your expenses every day. So you're always knowing how much money you have. And then seeing the sales come in is also a great motivator, especially when you're in the early stages of business and you're really trying to get sales. And it's also a great way to create your sales goals, because you have things that you want to invest in. You enter them all in there and then you'll know how much money you have to make. So I would say minimum like once a week, maybe once every other week, because there's also like bills to pay. And I think a lot of bills now you might have like on auto pay or auto renew, and that's fine. But if you're not looking at your money, you might not even be using those apps or whatever you have on auto pay anymore, you know? So the more you look at it, I just think the more confident you're going to be. And then that just overall helps with your money mindset in general.
Yeah, you're more aware of it, but then also nothing's a surprise. You start to, like you said, kind of get comfortable with just, it's part of what you do. You know your numbers. You're not checking your bank account as you go to make a purchase and hope that you have enough money. And
yeah, exactly.
So what do you feel like are some of the basics that most people get wrong when it comes to either, you know, establishing a budget or just getting in kind of this more positive relationship with money and their mindset?
I definitely think people overcomplicate it. Like, even if you don't use a spreadsheet, just get a piece of paper and just write out like your bills, write out everything that you spend money on, and then write how much money you have coming in, and then, you know, subtract it. And that's your cash. It's that simple. It's easy to create in a spreadsheet. If you use spreadsheets, it's simple, like add, subtract formula. I think people really overcomplicate it. And they're like, oh, I need all these systems and I need this app that reminds me to not go over. And like, it's okay if you go over. Like, who cares? That's fine. And it's normal. You're not going to like stick to your budget. You know, if you go over, just update your number and let the formula or, you know, your math on a piece of paper do the work, I guess you could say. But yeah, it's just, if you keep it simple, it will be simple. So I think that's the main thing. Yeah.
I love that. And that's so refreshing to hear from an expert. Like you don't need all these fancy tools. You don't need, you know, this budgeting workbook and you don't need to, it always cracks me up. Just like you said, how we overcomplicate things and you're like, just take a piece of paper, write it down, get organized really is what it comes down to. So apps, it sounds like, aren't kind of your go-to. What are some of the other resources or tools that either you use or you recommend to clients?
Honestly, I just, for money at least, I just use spreadsheets. Like I use QuickBooks, but again, like unless you're getting set up by an expert, I would not recommend QuickBooks for anybody. Even QuickBooks Self-Employed is not good. You can't even upgrade. So if you're using QuickBooks Self-Employed and then you want to upgrade into the regular QuickBooks, you have to like export all your data and re-import it. It's really weird. Like I don't even know what QuickBooks Self-Employed is. Like I love QuickBooks, but what is that product? Like I don't even get it.
That's interesting. And I'm glad that you brought that up because I was actually looking into QuickBooks because I've heard people talk about it. So what you're saying is that it doesn't give you the option to just simply move it over when you're ready to delegate or outsource it. And so it's kind of, you've got all your information in one spot, but then you can't really do much with it.
Yeah. And I mean, there's so much complications with QuickBooks. I could talk about like a whole topic on this. But basically, a lot of times when people get QuickBooks, they don't customize their categories. And that's like step number one, customize your categories. So, okay, get QuickBooks and customize your categories. But then when you start linking things, if you're not linking it right, it's really easy to like double book expenses or double book revenue because sometimes what happens is if you send an invoice through QuickBooks or Wave or whatever, then the software recognizes that as revenue. And then when they pay it, they recognize it as revenue again. And then with PayPal, if you got your PayPal linked and then you've got your credit card linked and then you're kind of using both and you're paying things like through PayPal, but you use your credit card, it could show up in both places. So unless you're doing reconciliations, which is basically like making sure that your bank statements match what your accounting software is saying, then there's a lot of room for error. And so I always suggest if you are doing it yourself, just get a spreadsheet and keep it simple. It's a little more manual, but I mean, the manual part is the categorizing. And even in QuickBooks, as much as they try to automate that, that's something that multi-million-dollar companies do manually. Some of it maybe is auto, you know, like the same expense might be auto-categorized, but you can't get around that. You have to go in there. If you bought something from Amazon, it could be anything. You have to go in there and choose a category for it to make it organized. So there's a lot of complications with softwares. And honestly, the easiest way, if you're going to be doing it yourself, is to just use a spreadsheet. Your accountant will love you at tax season. You'll love yourself because everything's so easy. You'll be updating it. You'll be getting a lot of clarity into actually what's going on in your business. You'll be able to improve your profit. So yeah, I would say like Excel all the way.
And if you're trying to automate things, I feel like you're missing the mark, right? Because like how we talked about when we first started talking is that money is personal. And if we try to just put things on autopilot, we're not actually in there looking at our numbers, looking at the habits, you know, the behaviors behind those numbers, then we're really missing the point of having a budget or tracking all this at all, it sounds like.
Yeah. I mean, you can automate some things, but, you know, the categorizing, the analyzing, you have to do that. And that's only going to help you become more confident and you know, just have a more positive relationship with money.
So let's talk a little bit more. You mentioned how you know, having a budget actually ends up giving you more freedom. It helps you to buy the things, to know what's going on. Let's say, you know, I know a lot of our listeners are early 20s, 30s, you know, maybe some of them still have a lot of student debt or, you know, getting ready, have a goal to buy a house and, you know, all those things that come with adulting. How do we deal with, you know, you've got this plan, you're feeling good. How do you deal with some of the social pressures around money and whether that's going out to eat or vacations or I guess almost competing with other people's lifestyle? Mm-hmm. Like, what do you do in that situation?
Yeah, I definitely would leave, you know, I would put in your budget a little bit of spending money. Even if you have a goal to become debt-free or you have a goal to buy a house, you don't want every single penny going there. You, in the meantime, enjoy your life, you know? If you want to buy something big, make it almost like a treat. Like, okay, I'm going to do my money work every single day this week and then I'll go out to eat or I'll buy whatever on the weekend, you know, as long as I do my money stuff during the week. And really what that's going to do, you might get more sales, you might get more money coming in because everything's like energy, you know? You're going to feel better about money. You're not going to be so desperate when you're looking for sales and things like that. You know, you're going to feel more relaxed because you're in control of it and you know what's going on. And then when you go buy the thing, you're just going to feel so much better about it because it's not like, oh, I don't know if I can afford this. It's like, no, it's in my budget. I know it's, I have put money aside for it. I know I can afford it. And you feel really, really good about going to get it. So I think, you know, maybe doing it like that would really help with all of that social pressure and just even wanting to go out and have fun. You know, like if you want to go out to eat with your friend, that's a good, fun, enjoyable thing to do. And that's something that you deserve, you know, go and have fun. So put it in your budget and you'll be fine.
Like you said, being flexible and just being realistic. Like if that's the season that you're in, if that's the life that you're living right now, it is what it is. You can either change your lifestyle or just face it for what it is and make those numbers reflect that. I love that.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's about moderation too, you know? So, I mean, don't overspend and go crazy. And I think if you're avoiding your finances, it's easy to overspend and go crazy like that. Because even for me, I'm like a shopaholic. Okay. Like if I'm stressed out, I want to go shopping.
Retail therapy.
Yeah, exactly. You know? So if I'm not looking at my numbers, it's really easy for me to just like credit card it and be like, whatever, I'll just deal with it later. You know, but if you are looking at your numbers, then it's more realistic, you know, and you're not going to overspend. You're like, okay, I'll buy something for like $20 or I'll treat myself to like a coffee this week or whatever it is, you know, whatever fits in your budget and just be mindful about it, you know, be intentional about where your money is going and keep moderation in mind.
I love that. So let's say, for example, somebody does still have a lot of debt, whether it's credit cards or student loans. There's a lot of different, you know, theories and strategies out there about how to tackle debt. What have you found has been most successful for most people, but also successful but sustainable, right? In helping somebody keep their sanity, especially kind of in their younger adult years.
Yeah, I think definitely having a plan. One of the products that I have is a debt payoff tracker that goes out 5 years and you can have up to 10 credit card or whatever, loans, mortgage, all of that. So seeing it and seeing this 5-year plan is really empowering and motivating. And then you want to also have a budget and you want to make sure that you are using the amount that you can afford. And I always use the Dave Ramsey method, the snowball method, where, you know, you pay off one debt, focus on that. I like to start with the smallest one because there's different ways you can do it. You can start with the smallest one, which is what I personally like to do because I like to see it gone. It just feels good. Even if it was like a little store credit card or whatever it was, a small amount, as soon as you see it gone, then you're like, oh, this feels good, you know, and it keeps that momentum going. Another good way is to choose the one with the highest interest rate. And that way, you know, you're not just paying so much more in interest. That's another good method. But essentially, you want to focus on one at a time. So if you have a lot of different accounts, put the minimums to all of them, and then whatever is the maximum that is realistic that you can afford, throw all of that money to one. And once that one's paid off, take all that money that you were paying there and add it to the minimum payment of whichever one is next. So in order to do that, I feel like you need to stay on top of it. You need to be tracking it. And so just having an organized plan that you're able to maintain and update it, you know, like if 1 month you couldn't pay as much as you wanted to, that's fine. But you need to update your plan because it may have adjusted, which is totally fine. And that's okay. That's probably going to happen if we're being realistic. But I think as long as you have that plan in place and you have a strategy, then that is just really, really helpful to get it done faster.
And I love what you said about mindset, because it sounds like paying off the one with the highest interest. Yeah, that maybe that's the most logical one, but we're talking to a bunch of emotionally driven people, emotionally driven women who need to check off the checkbox to see the color code change in the spreadsheet. Like, we're all type A, thrive on that. And so I think if you can connect more of that emotion to your money, like if you know that you're driven that way, that can make such a difference. And it sounds like by looking at it more regularly, that just can help continue to encourage that mindset. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And like, it's not as overwhelming. If you look at it daily, you can, you know, the initial setup is going to be a lot. Think about anything. If you're setting up automations, you could spend like days and weeks setting it up, but then you don't have to think about it again. So setting it up, and actually, you know, right now is the perfect time because we are a little bit into 2020. So you've got some data to work with as far as like creating your categories and things like that. But yeah, I mean, essentially you just go in and just whatever you spent that day, update your numbers with it, which is, if you do this daily, it's really not going to be that much. Whereas if you do it weekly and you've got like two people, like your spouse and yourself, spending money left and right, you know, then it becomes a little overwhelming. And then if it's overwhelming, it's just like, oh, no, I'll just do it later. And then it's just, now it's 2 weeks, then it's 3 weeks, and then it's, you know, the whole year. So I kind of like the idea of doing it daily. I mean, and once you set it up, it's just a few minutes, you know?
Yeah. The more frequently you look at it, the less there is to look at, because you're not waiting until the end of the year. One of our listeners had a question. She asked, how do I start saving for a house? What's the appropriate and realistic amount? And is there a right answer for that? I think that's so different for everybody, but what's your opinion on buying a house?
I would say first thing to do is contact a mortgage broker. If you've got it in your mind that you think you want to buy a house, the earlier that you get with a mortgage broker, the better, just because they're going to tell you what you're going to be approved for. And once you know how much you're approved for as far as a mortgage loan, then start looking at the houses around you and then split the difference. That's what you're going to need to come up with. So think about, you know, the timeline of how quickly you want to move. And then, okay, well, I've got, you know, a year to come up with this much money, and then break it down by month and then by week, and then put it in your budget and be like, oh, this is what I'm saving. Put it like as a deduction of your cash, you know, this is used money. Make like a little line specifically for savings. You can make like a little schedule for it or whatever, like whatever works for you. But yeah, I would say step number one, if you're going to be saving for a house, is contact the mortgage broker for sure.
I love hearing you say timelines, like plan for a year or plan, you know, 5-10 years to get out of debt, because I think it's like life, you know, we want that instant gratification and we want to see, it's like with weight loss, you know, I get people coming to me all the time with weight loss and they're like, I want a fix now. And I think it's refreshing or just realistic to hear that's not necessarily the case with money and like everything in life.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's important to realize that, you know, and then, and to have these long-term goals that you look at every day so that you can adjust, because your long-term goal for debt payoff, maybe that's going to change. Maybe you have a baby in the middle of it and you're like, okay, now we need more money for the child that we have and less money to pay off the debt. And that's fine, as long as your plan is flexible, which is why I like spreadsheets, because you just go in there and just change it you know, so change you it have to change it.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Just get comfortable with like, this is your general plan and it's going to change. So plan for it to change and create a way where you can easily update it.
I love just your voice around money and your attitude. You make me feel so much better, right? I think sometimes when we talk to financial experts or we hear them, you know, on TV or on the radio, it's like, oh, it's got to be this, you know, man or woman in a business suit and everything has to be so serious. And you're like, it's not a big deal.
Just go with I'm like the opposite of serious.
I love that though, because it's so much more relatable for those of us who just are like confused and overwhelmed. And like what you're saying is that it doesn't have to be. So last question we have from one of our listeners that there were a lot of questions, but I think we've hit on a lot of them. Lindsay asked, you know, what is the most important financial step you can take in our stage of life? And she made a joke. She's like, by stage of life, I mean like these 10 years of your 20s and 30s.
Yeah, I think the best thing you can do is to create a budget or forecast. What I like, I'm like transitioning to starting to use forecasts because I don't want people to feel restricted.
I love
it. So have a plan, like get a spreadsheet, put all your bills, you know, start with like your recurring bills that don't really change. And then start with the ones that do change, like groceries are not going to be the same every single week. So get like a ballpark amount and kind of when you do groceries, just stay around that. And then if you notice that, okay, well, I had this much budgeted for groceries, but I've been spending more, then just update your budget to that higher amount or lower amount, whatever it was. So I would say in these years, you definitely want to have some kind of easy to maintain plan. And definitely, I think something that's like really important is to just look at it often. And update it often. Make sure it's easy and flexible. That's the main thing, is that it has to be able to change. So I think as long as you have like a spreadsheet or like a piece of paper that has your expenses and you look at it often, I think you're on the right track.
Keep it simple. Keep it flexible. Yeah. Look at it often.
Exactly.
We can apply that to so, that is not just a money tip. That is a life tip.
Right?
Well, this has been so much fun and so much good knowledge. So what is next for you, Alexis? Like what is kind of your big goals with where you're at, you know, and what are you getting ready to check off your list next or maybe forecasting for the next?
Yeah. I am literally trying to get famous. So people laugh, but I mean, I'm like the next Dave Ramsey. So
putting it out there, like, putting it out in the universe.
A more fun version.
With hot pink and glitter.
Exactly.
I love
like if
that.
If you want like the vanilla, super business, like, you know, stuffy, whatever, then maybe I'm not for you. But if you want to like have fun, then yeah, that's my mission this year, is to really just get out there and be more visible to more women and just help them to realize that it does not have to be overwhelming. It does not have to be complicated. Just keep it simple and have fun with it. And like once you start like doing it and not making it this heavy thing and realizing it's easy, then I mean, your money mindset is just better. And then abundance will just flow to you. It's just, it'll be awesome. So that's my mission, basically.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Well, to everybody who's listening, be sure to post on social media. We'll help you get towards that goal because definitely more women need to hear your message. So what is the best thing? I always like to ask my guests this. What's the best thing that's happened to you this week? It's only Tuesday, but I know. Maybe last week.
Well, I have to say, I've been setting up a lot of automations in my business. I hired an assistant. So I think being able to just have more time to do things like this and having that automation on things that can be automated so that I can spend more time with my clients or with doing my podcast or going on other people's podcasts. I'm all about like getting out there now and just spreading the word and spreading the message. So I think one of the probably the most exciting thing that happened was that I hired an assistant and I actually like set up a little portal with video trainings for her. So I don't even have to like physically like to walk her through everything. I'm like, here's your trainings. So I was happy about that.
That feels so good.
Yeah.
that is like with the podcast. Well, I shouldn't even say this. Lauren, our other host, used to do all the editing and all the back end stuff for the podcast. And when we finally delegated that to somebody else, it was like, it's just such a relief when you can take something off your plate, right? And
yeah,
nine times
out of ten. It's like freeing.
Freeing. Yeah. And nine times out of ten, it's something that somebody else is probably better at doing than you anyways, right?
Yeah, totally.
Takes them half the time and half the brain space. So
yeah,
I love that. Well, what is the best way for our listeners to find you if they want to connect with you on social media? I know you've got lots of resources on your website. So where can we find you?
Yeah, the best place to find me is going to be my website. It's alexischristina.com, and that's with a Y and a K. So it's alexischristina.com. Everything's there. My Facebook group is there. My Instagram is there. And some freebies are available there. My podcast is there. So that's definitely like the hub. And then you can kind of pick and choose if you want to find Instagram or Facebook or get on the freebie.
So that's our homework to our fit friends, is to go to your website, check out all those freebies. Like, you don't even have to make the spreadsheet. You can just, like you said, download one of your spreadsheets and get to work and start taking control of your forecast. We won't call it budget. We'll call it your forecast.
Yes, forecast.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the show.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. If you liked this episode, don't forget to share it with a friend. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook at Fit Friends Happy Hour. Talk to you next time.